So allow me to begin by making a decidedly unheavy metal analogy. I hope you'll forgive me. Black Sabbath, the original Black Sabbath, the band that back in the late 1960s brought to bear a new breed of music called heavy metal. Black Sabbath is a lot like a lemon meringue pie. On the top, there's singer Ozzy Osbourne. Ozzy, he's the meringue. He's frothy. He's puffed up. He's kind of glazed. He makes the pie look good in the glass display case. Then you've got guitarist Tony Iommi and bassist Geezer Butler. They're like the lemon filling, the richest part of the pie. They've got more substance than the meringue. They're the signature flavor. And then, of course, underneath it all, hidden away, but holding everything together, is the drummer, Bill Ward. He's the crust. When I was younger, I loved the meringue. It was novel. It was exotic. Then I got a little older, and I got into the filling. So sweet, it can make your teeth hurt and your eyes water. Then finally, I had a realization. What I really loved about lemon meringue pie all along is the crust. And I never realized it until I started playing the drums myself. I've only been at it a couple of years. I'm a dilettante, I fully admit. But you know how if you get a red car, all of a sudden you start noticing all the other red cars out there on the road? It's like that with playing drums, too. When you listen to music, drums are what you hear. And when I listen to Black Sabbath, my absolute favorite band of all time, what I hear is Bill Ward. To me, Bill Ward is Black Sabbath. Last week, I got a chance to meet him, to interview him. But as the date approached, I started to get distracted by this odd plan that was percolating in my mind. This plan, I can't tell if it's a good idea or if it's going to end up offending my drum hero. But I also don't want to miss an opportunity for something truly, cosmically splendid to happen. So I seek some counsel. I call some old buddies that I used to play in bands with back in the day. First, I call a guy named Edwin Wilmore. Edwin and I had an old band together, and he used to sing into a microphone that had a fake cobra duct taped to it.
What's up, Aaron?
How you doing, man?
Good.
Can you believe I'm going to get to interview Bill Ward from Black Sabbath?
That's like a fantasy from late teenagerdom, but it's still awesome. There are a number of things I can think of from like the age of 19 that I thought were going to be awesome that if they happened today, they wouldn't be. This is one of those things that would be awesome, and is.
I'm thinking about bringing my drum kit to the interview to ask him to play it, to see if he'll play it. Does that seem like a good idea?
It does. But is your drum kit good? Is it, like, nice enough?
No. Look.
I mean, maybe.
These days, the guy's got, I'm sure, a $20,000, $50,000 drum kit. But when Black Sabbath started, you've seen those old pictures of him. It's just him with a ratty old snare drum. I think he would be touched if I was just like, "Will you grace my drum kit?"
Well, yeah, that's definitely something you want to have him do, is grace your drum kit.
Because then I would be able to say from there on afterwards, Bill Ward from Black Sabbath played my drum kit.
Yeah. Who's this?
Matthew Solberg, seminal bandmate from my old days in Chicago. Can you believe I'm going to get to interview Bill Ward from Black Sabbath?
No, dude. I know how much that band means to you. I'm therefore extremely excited that you have this opportunity because, you know, it's got to make you pretty stoked.
So I keep thinking about bringing my drum kit to the interview and asking him if he wants to play it. Does that seem stupid?
I don't know, man. I mean, if that happened, then Bill Ward would have played your drums.
Exactly.
And then you're kind of stuck with that knowledge. Like, you know, yeah, it's really cool that Bill Ward played your drums, but at the same time, how do you go ahead and play them afterwards?
Yeah, I never thought about the repercussions.
Or do you just bronze them and, you know, create a little plexiglass cube to put in the middle of house and put the drums within it.
So you can see the conundrum. This is a fraught situation. I still don't know if I'm going to go through with this, you know, all the way up until the night before the interview. That's when I make a call to my current bandmate, Baynard Woods.
Hey, Dan, it's Aaron calling. I'm not going to be at practice tonight. And when you guys get to the practice space, you will see that my drum kit will not be there either. And that is because I'm on a mythical quest, dude. Rock on.
The morning of the interview, I roll up to the Annapolis Collection Gallery. This is an art space where there's an exhibition up called Absence of Corners. Fine art photographs, long exposure shots of a drummer rocking out on a drum kit. The drummer in the photographs is Bill Ward, and he's in town to celebrate the opening of the exhibition. I go in, set up my drum kit, set up some microphones, and then in he walks. Gray ponytail, wire-rimmed glasses, shorts, and a shirt with a skull on it. He's wearing those fingerless drummer gloves. He extends a hand, and we shake. Bill Ward, I've got to come clean here and confess to you up front that I'm totally starstruck right now. I'll be honest about that. I got my hands on a cassette tape of Black Sabbath when I was in like fifth grade, and honestly, your music has been part of the fabric of my life ever since then. So the first thing I really want to say to you is thank you for that.
Oh, you're very welcome. Yeah, I'm honored. I'm honored. Thank you. They're very kind words.
It must feel strange to know that you mean so much in the hearts of so many people, right? People you will never meet, but who feel really bonded to you in a way and to your music.
Well, it doesn't feel strange. It feels very endearing. I'm just very honored, you know.
I wonder if you might take us back to the very beginning and tell the story of your first memory sitting down behind a drum kit. How far back can you remember? I mean, imagine the cosmos must have shaken the first time you hit a drum. This was destiny in the making. Tell me the story about this.
I was about five. My mother and father were very musical, and my brother's musical as well. But on Saturday nights, they would have a party. And it was always listening to the GI music. The American soldiers came over to Great Britain from the embarkation to go to war, you know. So they brought their records with them, and that's when, you know, my mother and father enjoyed the American music. So every Saturday night when I was a child, there would be a huge party at the house. And the man who lived only four houses away would bring his traps. And that's, for those of you who don't know, that's another word for drums. And he used to bring his drums, and my mum would play piano, and everybody would have what they call a ding-dong, which was a, you know, huge party. And it was on the Sunday mornings when everybody was hungover that I would go down the stairs, and the drummer who played every Saturday night had left his drums set up. He was too drunk to take them home. So I would sit down, and I discovered the hi-hats, and I really liked the sound of the hi-hats, and I would take a stick and hit the top of the hi-hat, and I would play the snare a little bit, and I discovered inch by inch what a drum kit was.
So you just taught yourself. It was a process of discovery. When did you get your own drum kit? Talk about how you got, you know, more seriously into it after this initial fascination as a child.
I didn't actually get my own drum kit till I was 15. And I worked my ass off. I went in the factory when I was 15. And I made enough money in about 2 months in a factory to get my own drum kit.
What were you making in the factory?
Rubber. Rubber piping. It's a real dirty job. It's a bad job.
How long was it after you got that drum kit until you ended up in your first band?
That was it. I mean, I was in the band. I was already in the band. I was just playing like boxes and anything that you could play on. So when I got to, it was a little premiere kit. One concert tom-tom, like a piccolo snare. And that was it. No floor tom-toms.
Set the scene for me, if you would, about just what the musical landscape was like for you when you started playing music. You talked about, you know, the GI records nights and stuff. I mean, where did you come from musically before you really paved your own road?
The musical landscape was unbelievably rich. I feel so fortunate because I was born at a time when there was so much to listen to. And it first of all started with American big band music, classical music. And then just at the turn of the 1950s, we had bands like the Ink Spots, the Platters, and as soon as I heard that music, I just totally grooved with that, you know. All of the early rock and roll, when I heard Elvis sing Jailhouse Rock, that was the end of my world, you know. I got so turned on by Jailhouse Rock, it was just like, I was already sent. I was already gone.
Let me, just to put things in perspective, explain that however Jailhouse Rock must have felt for you in terms of a musical revelation, for a lot of kids in fifth grade or younger or older, the first time they heard Black Sabbath was the same experience. I mean, you had created something equally revolutionary. So I wonder if you might now talk about that moment when Black Sabbath really exploded onto the world stage. You were a new band, you had created a new sound, and all of a sudden you had these arenas full of ecstatic, you know, headbanging kids. And what was it like to realize you had suddenly, like, born into existence heavy metal?
The realization part, Aaron, it's very difficult for me to recognize that. It was just a great feeling knowing that that so many people were getting turned on. It's quite strange, actually. It's like when you're in the eye of the hurricane, there's a sense of calmness. And we were just literally showing up every single day, going onto the stage and playing. And that was something that we had been doing now for a long, long time. I understand the question, but it's difficult for me to turn it around and observe it, because I was inside it. But I can answer the question by, when I go to see some of my favorite bands, Metallica or Slayer or, you know, for example, then I get that feeling just the same way when I saw the Beatles for the first time.
But you must also realize when you see Metallica or Slayer, yeah, that those guys grew up listening to you, yeah, and that you influence the way they're sounding.
Right, I understand. Yeah,
that's,
yeah,
wild.
Yeah.
I wonder what you think the psychological vein was that you tapped at that moment that really caused such a wave. I mean, people were just waiting for this kind of music, it seemed.
Well, you know, there'd been some unbelievably good music that came before us. Dave Davis, when he did You Really Got Me, ba-na-na-na-na, and Pete Townsend had opened up some doors to say, this is okay. So we were already in a place where we knew we were going to play loud. We love playing loud, but it's going to be raucous. And it's going to be kind of a, I don't give a f*** kind of a place, you know. It was that kind of a feeling that nobody was playing for the man. We played for ourselves. So we all, already that freedom had been established.
I'm 40 years old, which means I was kind of obviously too young to see you guys in your heyday. But I've enjoyed your sort of radioactive half-life that will continue for centuries beyond that. So the closest thing I can experience to you playing drums live is to watch these old videos, right? And I watch these videos of you on the drums, and you've got this look on your face that's like, it's like you're staring into the farthest corners of the universe when you're playing. And I wonder if there's any way to put into words what you're experiencing in your mind at moments like that.
It's primal. Yeah, I have to go to the primal scream every time. If I don't go to the primal scream, then it's a waste of time me playing. They have a saying now these days, I hear it more often, where you leave it all on the stage. Well, I've been living it all on the stage for over 40-odd years, you know, a long, long time. You have to go to that place of complete exhaustion. But it's the primal scream. It's orgasmic, you know, so it's the same place as an orgasm. That's how it is in playing.
You talk about this idea of leaving it all on the stage. I wonder what kind of a toll this life path has taken on you, physically, emotionally, psychologically. I mean, it's a very unusual career path with amazing things that go on with it. But I imagine things with, you know, you look back now 45 odd years back from this seminal moment in time and all that's happened since. I wonder what the sort of pros and cons are for you as you look back and evaluate your life as it's been so far, as the drummer for Black Sabbath and such a seminal character in the music world.
Physically, it's been demanding, to say the least. And later on, yes, there have been things. You know, earlier I was talking about my shoulder. So shoulder repairs are commonplace now, you know, and I have a few other drummer friends the same age as me who are also having shoulder replacements and things like that. But yes, it's definitely taken a physical toll. At the same time, it's also helped to save my life, because there's nothing more healthier than playing drums. It's a great way of exercising and keeping yourself pretty fit. But of course, I had to indulge in all the abuses as well, of course, you know, which I don't anymore and haven't done for many, 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 many years. But for a while I did, and that took its toll. So yeah, I think we can put our bodies through a lot of physical abuse.
Well, as you say, you survived the eye of the hurricane and the years that came afterwards. And now here you are, in a sense, this elder statesman of heavy metal, who's got a sore shoulder, yeah. And you know, is sort of looking back on this career. And now you've moved on to the visual arts. Let's segue into a conversation about the images that are surrounding us. We're here at Annapolis Collection Gallery, where you've got this incredible series of photos. These are intense sort of extended exposure photographs that trace the motion of your drumsticks, these vibrant streaks of color, right? As you're sitting at your kit and playing. Talk about these images and how they came to be.
Well, what we did is we did a darkroom, a photo shoot. I used different colored sticks, multiple cameras, lots and lots of different lights, cameramen all over the place. And they told me to play whatever I wanted to play, which was great. I liked that kind of stuff. And they just kept shooting. And as you can see right here, Aaron, we came out with all kinds of shapes and images. And then about a month after that, we came to what I call the collaborative part, which is where the guys, Corey and Ravi, gave me...
These are the photographers behind this project.
Yes, that's right. They're from Scene 4, based in Los Angeles. They gave me these pictures to look at, and they put titles to them. And
do you want to maybe say some of the titles and some of the ideas behind some of these images?
Yeah, I'd love to, yeah. I'll start with one of my favorites first. One of them is We Focus, We Persevere. And you can see the image of me, which is kind of faded. However, there's so much light, and it's actually a beautiful picture. I know it's in the gallery right now. This particular picture is dedicated on a personal level to my fellow drummers that have faced hardship, either with health or contractually, or had problems, or whatever it might be. This picture was taken when I was going through a pretty tough time with some disputes I was having with my band Black Sabbath. This was taken at that time, and I wanted to call it We Focus and We Persevere, We Overcome, We Ascend, you know. Fire and Brimstone in My Pocket, which I love that title. I was kicking ass when we did this one, okay? I was just like, yeah, you can see how it's all completely different, the shapes and designs. Then I call that Fire and Brimstone in My Pocket. It's about, I did it because, number one, when I first saw the picture, it looks like quite monstrous, quite demonic. And I thought about that, you know, in the terms of like when I was a kid, how Fire and Brimstone was kind of scary, you know. When I was 16, it scared me to death. When I was 20, I didn't realize I was in it, you know.
You were the one scaring other people.
I was living in Fire and Brimstone. And now, today, age 66, Fire and Brimstone, I keep it in my pocket now.
What was it like to see these images for the first time and see your music frozen?
It was really scary. It was an emotional time for me when this was done. So it almost turned out to be like therapy. But some of these pictures really scared me because I couldn't understand how all of that had come out of me. At the same time, it brought a lot of tears and heartbreak. We've got some things here that just break my heart. there's one here, Aaron, Making Flowers from My Heart. And when I look at that, I see just nothing but sadness. So they represented different emotions for me.
I wonder if the session was recorded. Audio. The images?
Everybody's asked that, including my brother. And I went, oh, my God, how come we didn't do that, you know?
Yeah, that is a minor oversight, right?
Yeah, it's something of a minor oversight.
Although it makes the pictures all the more mysterious, right? You'll never be able to hear exactly what made that image.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we were rocking. Again, you know, we really were. I was just jamming out. You know, we were playing on the master kit. It was a Sabbath kit that was stage ready, and I was stage ready. But this, of course, was in 2012, and the band had made a decision to go another way. So, but that I mean, then that's okay. You know, I mean, I'm not being vindictive when I say that. It's just the nature of the beast. It just so happens that it was on a ironic that I was playing the session on a kit that was prepared to go, and I was prepared to go as well. So anyway.
A little break here for just a second to put a few words of context behind what Bill Ward is saying. The irony that he's talking about and the sadness you hear in his voice, it all boils down to this in a nutshell. Black Sabbath recently got back together. They recorded a new album and they went on tour. But they did it with another drummer. So as an interviewer, right about now is when it would make sense for me to say something like, what happened? What was that all about? How does it feel to be left out in the cold like that? But I look into the pain on this man's face, this guy who's my hero, but who at this moment is also incredibly human and vulnerable and kind. And I decide to change the subject and ask him something else. I have one request for you here, Bill Ward, before we part ways. And that is, I've got my own drum kit set up over here. The entire kit, by the way, probably cost a fraction of one of your actual cymbals on your real Sabbath quality drum kit. I just wonder if you might do me the honor of sitting down for just a minute and gracing it with a bit of your playing, as much as you'd be willing. It would be kind of like getting blessed by the Pope of heavy metal.
Yeah. it's very flattering. Well, I'll do my best. Let me preface this, okay, because September the 18th was when I had my shoulder surgery, and that was last year in 2013. And I'm still in shoulder rehab. So this will be the first time I've sat behind a drum kit since September the 18th, 2013, when all this happened. So I'll give it a try, okay? And you got a snapshot here. This is something that's quite historic, actually. So let me try, okay? I literally haven't. I'm a bit scared because I don't know. I've got no idea what my shell, what it's going to be like. But at the same time, I'm quite excited. So thanks for the opportunity, Aaron. It's been a while. It's been a while.
Bill Ward, that was truly an honor. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron. All right. You've made my day.
And you've made mine. At the end of the day, I like to believe it was a good idea that I brought that drum kit, but not for any of the reasons I anticipated. I like to think those drums gave my hero a chance to be what he was meant to be, a hero. Before he left, he grabbed a Sharpie marker and he signed my kick drum. To Aaron, rock forever, Bill Ward.